Money FM 89.3, best of workday afternoon. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Good afternoon and welcome to Market View Wrap on Money FM 89.3. Now, this is a rather unusual day today. I am Clarissa Montero in the studio with finance presenter JP Ong and on the phone with Jeff Howie, market strategist from the SGX. Last week, we wrapped the month. Today should actually be the wrap of the month. It is the last day of the month.
Mm-hmm. Well, today's October 1st.
But it's technically a brand new month. So what we're going to do...
It's the month of the rosary, by the way.
Yeah, okay. What?
Sorry, my Filipino Catholicness is coming out.
Your Catholic is showing. So today what we're going to do is JP is going to set the stage and then Jeff is going to come in and basically talk to us about the highlights of Q3 of 2021.
Absolutely. But we are at the start of Q4, the fourth quarter.
Yes, so we're looking back so we can look forward. Get
okay.
it?
Yes, yes, yes. I see everybody's woken up on the wrong side of the bed today. And possibly because we're looking at a very deep shade of red from markets across the region.
I didn't even want to talk about that.
We'll start off with the STI in today's session, the Straits Times Index, mirroring the color of that Mercury retrograde. And we are seeing it down by 1.3%, almost 40 points below where it closed on Thursday and down to 3,047 points. So not a great start to the fourth quarter for the STI, but their misery does have company. We'll get to that in just a little bit. 583 million Singapore dollars in total trades changing hands, and across the broader main board and catalyst, we're seeing that losers are outnumbering gainers by a ratio of more than 2-1. There's 229 stocks, REITs and trusts that are in the red, 107 that are in the green. But that also means because of this low number of advances versus decliners, there's a lot of stocks that are also just staying put at the moment as well. Perhaps investors, they're not knowing which way to go at the moment. But there's really a lot of worry that seems to be emanating across the region. Now, before we start looking at the rest of the Asia-Pacific space, we have to note that mainly Chinese markets in Hong Kong will be offline today in observance of the national holiday. For mainland China, that's going to stretch until Wednesday of next week. So we're not going to get a lot of action out of mainland China, which, again, has been also a source of a lot of this recent market anxiety. There are concerns again about China Evergrande perhaps posing more problems for mainland Chinese markets, especially for bonds and especially for the fixed income space, and also worries about that impending power crisis in mainland China and how it might impact economic growth in the world's second largest economy. There are also indicators that we're starting to see signs of activity slow down. And one thing that's going to be worth watching out for in mainland China is this extended holiday period and whether or not retail sales picks up and thus gives us more of an indication as to whether or not the consumer sentiment in mainland China is actually being affected by some of these uncertainties for the most part. Hong Kong also offline today's session, but again, take a look at how deep the losses are in Japan. The Nikkei 225 today has dropped by about 2.2% to 28,786 points. We do have the South Korean Kospi also down by about 1.7% and sold to 3,018. The Thai in Taipei is trading today, but not looking pretty. We're seeing the Taiwan weighted exchange today plunging by 2.4% to 16,532, and the ASX 200 also down by about 2% to 7,189 points. Apart from some of those issues, we did get a slew of PMI data from across the region. Japan's PMI numbers, again, slowing down to 51.5. The only standout was South Korea's PMI figures. It actually grew. They showed expansion in South Korea to about 52.4. One notable, at least PMI number that's worth tracking in the region is Vietnam, because of how central it is to a number of global supply chains. Vietnam's the PMI numbers contracting once again, just a tad above 40, actually, and just shows how badly the manufacturing sector in Vietnam has been affected by these COVID-19 restrictions there. Malaysia also posting dismal PMI numbers, and these two might be worth watching in terms of gauging sentiment. Out in the United States, as we know, there are still some concerns about raising the debt ceiling and if it could lead to a potential default for the first time in the U.S.'s history. Those interest rates also rising for the most part. So again, when you take all of this, a lot of markets are starting to talk about this quote-unquote wall of worry that could be facing markets in the fourth quarter. Generally, the fourth quarter has been a positive one for most markets for the most part, but then there's a lot of things that might keep people a bit jittery over the next 3 months. There is one thing, though, that might be worth noting in terms of a bright spot. And as we noted, while Australian markets are selling off today, there is one notable standout right now, and that's Qantas Airways, which is actually trading more than 1% higher. There was an announcement today from Australia that they are planning to reopen or resume international travel as soon as November, and this is lifting their flag carrier for the most part, but they're one of the few stocks that's actually doing well in Australia. As we mentioned a while ago, it's a wall of red right now across the region, and the fact that the STI is just down by 1.2%, hey, it could be worse. We could be losing ground as much as Taiwan, Japan, and Australia this Friday.
All right. Well, we started the day slipping 0.5% just after the open. We're now in a deeper shade of red, but it's not terrible. 1.2%. I mean, you know, I'm being a fair Asian mom here. That's not too bad.
Is there such a thing? Oh, anyway, sorry.
JP, I'm going to reach over and smack you.
I'll bring
the non-Asian into the conversation now. Jeff, give us some high points, though, of the week. And, you know, let's look back at quarter three.
Yeah, look, I think, like JP was talking, that the themes for the quarter ahead will be very much like the quarter we've just had. The wall of worry, if you will, it's more about, I guess, the bricks and mortar of it are the COVID-19 constrained growth, the potential interest rate expectations with higher interest rates, the outlook for global trade, demand for commodities. But you can't neglect as well all the corporate efforts we're making here in Singapore to really maximise our operational efficiencies with strategic restructures and so forth. So there's always plenty to look at. But nonetheless, it was a relatively muted quarter. The STI declined 0.2%, and that was closer to the global stocks, with the FTSE All World Index down 0.1%. So we're pretty much in line with the big stocks across the world. APAC, of course, was weighed by China, so the FTSE APAC Index was down 2.5%, while the broader ASEAN region was a little stronger, up 1% on the back of some recoveries made from the COVID-19 constraints we saw earlier in the quarter. But nonetheless, this was our narrowest trading range in 4 years for that September quarter. So only a 6% differential between high and low of the STI. And it was really on the back of, I think, global banking stocks also saw their narrowest trading range in something like 3 years. And banks, as you know, they make up more than 40% of the STI. So for the quarter, you had the 2 to the 10 US yield curve, US Treasury yield curve, really comparatively steady. It ended at 120 basis points, which is where it was at the end of June as well. But if you look in the quarter, you could see from the 30th of June through to the 4th of August, so for the first 5 weeks of the quarter, that yield curve did flatten from 120 basis points to 100 basis points. And then from the 4th of September right through to yesterday, that yield curve steepened from 100 basis points back up to 120 basis points. Now, what that saw was these measured moves in global stock sectors that are really important to the STI. So from the 30th of June to the 40th of August, the global banks declined 2%, while global REITs gained 4%. And then from the 4th of August to the 30th September, the global banks gained 4% and the global REITs actually came back 4%. So those steeper yield curves at the backer end of the quarter, that suits the banks that borrow short and lend long. And then when the yield curve steepening is driven by gains on the long end of the curve, the 10-year yields, the higher yields of the interest rates decrease the yield premium over the interest rates that REITs offer investors, or over the yields that REITs offer investors. So basically we saw that play out to a T here in Singapore in our REIT market. Like the global REITs, the IHS REIT index, it also gained 4% for the first 5 weeks of the quarter, and then from 4th of August right through to yesterday, declined 4%. The trio of banks, they were a little less correlated to their global peers. DBS and UOB finished in line with global banking stocks, with OCBC declining actually 2%. But look, over the quarter, the two stocks here that represent the energy sector that are among our 100 most traded stocks, that's Catalyst listed REX and Main Board listed RH Petrogas, they saw the highest net institutional inflows compared to combined sector market cap over those past 3 months. So that coincided with Brent crude oil gaining something like 5%, and the gains in September for crude oil were even stronger. It was up around 8% for the month of September, and that 8% gain in crude oil, it coincided with RH Petrogas ranking as the strongest performer of our 100 most traded stocks here in September. I think RH Petrogas delivered a 19% return on the month, while Rex International was just outside the top 10 performers with a 9% gain. And lo and behold, the energy sector was also the strongest performing sector across the globe over that last quarter that we've just come out of. Real estate sector was the least performing across the world, but nonetheless, Capitaland Invest, PropNex, they managed to gain 15% each, and I think Hong Kong Land also edged marginally higher, up 3%, but the remaining seven developers and operators that make up the 100 most traded stocks, that's seven of them, they averaged 7% declines. Now, Capitaland Investment, it debuted on the 20th of September. It's averaged more than $90 million a day in trading turnover, and that's much higher than their predecessor, Capitaland, which used to trade a little less than $40 million a day, and last year at $33 million a day. So one more I should point out is the telecommunications, okay? So Singtel saw the most net institutional inflow of the 100 stocks in the third quarter. It had $200 million of net buying and generated a 9% total return, and that's in the face of its global peers that actually declined 2%. And pretty much, I guess, those gains in Singtel ever since that company announced its issuance of around 1 billion Singapore dollars of PEP securities under its 10 billion Singapore, 10 Singapore dollar billion euro medium term note program. Ever since it announced that, the stock has basically outpaced those global telecommunication indices, so much so that Singtel is now marginally ahead of the big global telecommunication indices in the year to date. And that's a company as well that's also been conducting strategic reviews, remember, as it announced in May, JP. And it's also, I think it'd be back on the 12th of August, reported a turnaround net profit, and also announced today that pension fund Australia Super is going to buy the 70% stake in its Singtel Australia Tower network for around very close to 2 billion Aussie dollars. StarHub was also comparatively strong. It generated 2% total return over the quarter, $5 million of net insti inflow, and remember that company also proposed an investment in shares of MyRepublic Broadband last week on the 22nd of September. So, basically when you look across the performance, it was relatively muted, as we say, when you look at the index. But then when you peel back and have a look at the actual sectors and the stocks, there was a lot of global relevance, a lot of stocks moving in line with these global trends. And as we say, those global trends really are to do with this COVID-19 constrained growth, the interest rate expectations, and of course the demand for commodities, as we saw with energy stocks here in Singapore outpacing, but those corporate efforts as well to restructure and maximise the operational efficiency of the companies is also gaining a lot of traction, a lot of investment interest. So it's going into the fourth quarter, there is that nice balance, if you will, of macro drivers as well as some pretty serious micro drivers in terms of what companies are doing to improve their efficiencies and come back better in 2022.
All right, so it is the first day of the fourth quarter. You talked about energy stocks. Let's look at that for a little bit before JP jumps in and talks about what you were saying with Singtel and some of the other telcos. Rex International opened today. Within the first 5-10 minutes of trading, it rose 4.8%. It is currently still firmly in the green. One of the few, I might add, stocks today that are in the green. It is now currently up 2.38%. We also saw Brent crude oil surpass $80 US a barrel. Is that a sign of things to come for the fourth quarter?
Yeah, well, I mean, for its first half of this year, the company did pretty well. I think its revenue was up 420% year on year. So it's the financial position has been pretty strong in the past, which poises it well, but obviously it really depends on what the outlook is for energy. And the energy market, interestingly, it's more driven, of course, by global demand and global supply and OPEC Plus supply management, obviously, But the but when you look at the actual the metals and the iron ore and so forth, that's not so much of a global driver. A global demand is that demand is not so much globally driven. It's more regionally driven, particularly China driven. So this is interesting in terms of the commodities and the price of crude oil. Price of crude oil being a key determinant, and the U.S. dollar, of course, a key determinant for the share price of the energy explorers and producers. But at the same time, there's been this growing divide or growing spread in the price ratio of the energy, the oil pricing to the more metal and iron ore pricing, which hasn't been as strong.
Now, that's going to be interesting because I believe OPEC is going to hold their next policy meeting next week, Jeff, at the start. And there are expectations, at least, that the members, at least, might be taking a look at this tighter than expected global global supply crunch. As we see these stockpiles turn into deficits slowly but surely, they might actually release more oil, which might be one of the reasons why we're seeing oil muted. But I think the big trend that everyone's still watching out for is that demand for oil has recovered at a quicker pace, and it might help everybody from upstream to downstream. I believe DBS recently released a note also saying that if we're looking at what to favor actually in terms of the vast oil industry, the upstream players might just get a little bit more because of the slightly lower valuations than their counterparts downstream.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. We've got the two companies, Rex International and RH Petrogas, that are among our 100 most traded stocks that are involved in exploration and production. There's also a number of, as you know, services that basically are down the chain from the explorers and producers that are also involved in servicing them in terms of engineering and, mm-hmm. and shipping and so forth that are also affected and impacted. So, yeah, going to be a big one off with the OPEC on next week.
Mm-hmm. So looking forward to next week then, what are we looking forward to next week? Silence.
Well, not at all.
It's going to be fairly busy.
Did you mention the PPI? Because we had the PPI this morning as well. And I'm good at when you're asking me out, well, remember what happens next week. what we just had. So the third quarter PPI, the preliminary number, it printed 0.9% quarter-on-quarter growth, very similar to the second quarter, which was up 0.8%. And it kind of overall reflected that overall deceleration in price increases over the past two quarters that followed on from those sharp rises. I think it was 3.3% gain in the first quarter of this year and 2.1% gain in the last quarter of last year. And that also expected some resilient higher frequency home sales data through the quarter. So all in all, that number was pretty much expected to come in at 0.9 around that area, and it did. But on Monday, we've got the PMIs for Singapore, September PMIs, and then August retail sales will be released on the Tuesday. Singapore Press Holdings also reports on Tuesday, and we have also a number of stocks that are going ex-dividend next week. Union Gas Holdings, SLB Development, HC Surgical Specialist, Lian Beng, GKE Corporation, Stanford Tires, and then Azus, and new Toyo International on Friday.
JP, what else do we have to look forward to?
Well, you know, so just a couple of things. Apart from OPEC's meeting, actually, we are looking also at to the release of retail sales here. And PMI numbers, of course, from Singapore also drew out at 9 p.m. on Monday. The Reserve Bank of Australia is set to make their decision on Tuesday. And one thing that might be interesting also is that we do have a handful of these global consumer stalwarts that might be worth tracking. 7&I, the Japanese company that owns the 7-Eleven brand and arguably the biggest operator of convenience stores in the world, set to release their earnings on Thursday. We've also got PepsiCo also releasing earnings out on Thursday. So slowly but surely, we're seeing a return back to earnings season. One thing that might be worth tracking, though, is that there was an article in the Business Times that when they surveyed a number of companies in Singapore, they are starting to feel that inflationary pressures might start to bite into their bottom lines in a more pronounced fashion because of some of these global supply constraints. So we're starting to see some of these global supply issues and also inflation perhaps playing a bigger part in terms of a bigger role and possibly a potential headwind for some of these companies. Will that actually reflect on the report card? Is something we'll have to track not just next week, but also in the succeeding for the month of October and November as well.
Oh, what fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hoping for a peaceful fall October.
Of course. And we have to also remember that with inflation if there are inflationary pressures, it'll be very interesting to see just how the Monetary Authority of Singapore reacts to this, actually, because they will be making their semi-annual policy statement in the middle of October. That's a couple of weeks away. But something definitely to look out for. I'm sure the folks at the MAS are keeping very close tabs of this, and this might also inform whether or not they decide to tighten policy and perhaps tweak some of the settings around the Sing dollar.
Well, the SDI is still in the red, down 1.2% right now to 3,051 points. We'll see if we hold the shade of red or we, you know, slide into a pale shade of green by the end of the day. This has been Market View Wrap on Money FM 89.3. I'm Clarissa Montero in the studio with finance presenter JP Ong and on the phone with Jeff Howie, market strategist from the SGX. Stay with Singapore's most influential radio station.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance.